As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Cool. All right, here we go.
Featuring Joe Sweeney from Thinking Sideways Podcast and filmmaker Vincent Caldoni. This is The Shocking Details.
Hey there. Welcome to another episode of The Shocking Details. I'm Joe, joined as usual by
Vincent Caldoni.
Yes. And this week we're going to talk about the disappearance of one George Kimmel. Mm-hmm. Of Arkansas City, Kansas. And I know, just another disappearance. But actually, this one actually turned into one of the strangest and longest lasting insurance cases in U.S. history. This one bounced around the courts for like 11 years, believe it or not. I know, it is, yeah. So George Kimmel was 31 years old. He worked as a bank cashier in Arkansas City. On July 29th, 1898, he left on a business trip. He stopped in Topeka, Kansas, and delivered $9,000 in bonds to the office of the Kansas State Treasurer.
It was a lot of money back then.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny, too. That's just the way they did things back in those days. You know, nowadays, you just, you know, make a little entry on a spreadsheet and push a button. And, you know, but yeah, he put them in a dashay case and transported them himself. Then from there, he telephoned a bank in Kansas City, Missouri, and arranged for them to have $530 in cash delivered to him in Kansas City the following afternoon.
Now, whose cash was this?
I do not know. I believe it was his own.
It was his own. Okay. That's what I was wondering. Yeah, it was the company or whatever.
Yeah. He just wanted to, you know, he just wanted to have them send it, forward it to where he was going to be the next day so he could pick it up.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
Yeah. So then what happened?
On July 30th, 1898, Kimmel arrived in Kansas City and checked into a hotel, the Midland. He picked up his package of $530 cash, and he was last seen around 7:15 getting into a cab with three other men, all of whom were unidentified. It would be a few days before anyone took note of George Kimmel's absence.
George Kimmel's uncle, Charles A. Johnson of Niles, Michigan, hired the Pinkerton Detective Agency. Remember those guys?
Oh, yeah. They're still around.
Oh, yeah. They hired those guys to find George. It was, of course, the Pinks who traced George as far as the Midland Hotel and discovered the news about his final cab ride. But that was as far as the trail went. As you know, as some people might say, the trail went cold.
Ooh.
But the Pinks didn't give up. Their next step was to put out an APB, or what passed for an APB in those days.
No way. I mean, I think they did have that, but it was literally a bulletin sent around in the mail.
Yeah.
It wasn't much in 1898.
Yeah. No.
But the Pinkertons distributed flyers with Kimmel's photo to just about every sheriff or police chief in the United States. The flyer offered a $500 reward for, quote unquote, information leading to the discovery of his whereabouts and placing him in the hands of his friends.
Unquote.
But despite the juicy reward money, which $500 is a lot of money back then.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah.
There was no report of Kimmel ever made. No one ever tried to report him.
Which is actually, you know, it's kind of surprising, unless he, of course, vanished, was abducted by aliens, or fell into a well, or murdered and buried in the woods. I don't know.
Yeah.
There is a twist in the story, it turns out. Not long before he disappeared, Kimmel took out life insurance for the amount of $25,000 with his sister. Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, his sister, Mrs. Edna E. Bonslet, was named as a beneficiary. And another twist was, after Kimmel went missing, it was discovered apparently that he was in debt and had been embezzling money from his bank. And
there's something about stories from this era. As soon as you hear life insurance policy, you know there's something messed up going on.
Well, especially if he took it out like just before, although that's a subjective thing. And, you know, who knows? Maybe he took it out a year before or 5 years before. Who the hell knows? But anyway, the information, though, I mean, between the life insurance policy and the fact that he apparently had been embezzling, this information caused a lot of people to assume that he had just skipped town to to evade the long arm of the law, maybe. Yeah.
See that?
Yeah. But nonetheless, he was still no sign of him turned up. Years went by.
In 1906, Edna Blonsett, that's the sister, filed papers to have her brother.
Edna Bonslet.
Bonslet.
Bonslet, yeah.
Oh, man. Can you imagine all the people writing in if we would have let that one slide?
Blonsett, no.
Bonslet.
Exactly.
Edna Bonslet filed papers to have her brother legally ruled dead. But the insurance company that held the Kimmel policies, New York Life, contested this, believing not unreasonably that Kimmel was probably alive and living under an assumed name somewhere.
Mm-hmm. I'd be wondering about that. Yeah.
So they launched their own search for Mr. Kimmel.
Yes, they did. And they had some success because around this time, a man in Erie, Kansas, whose name has been lost to history, we'll call him John Doe. He read a newspaper article about George Kimmel. Actually, Kimmel's disappearance was a major thing in the Midwest, and it was all over the papers. So he read this article and clipped it out and mailed it to one Andrew J. White, who was currently imprisoned in New York State. And it turns out Andrew White and John Doe had been patients together at the Matteawan Asylum for the Criminally Insane at Fishkill Landing, New York. And that's really what it was called. I love those old names, the Criminally Insane. I just love that.
Right. Yeah. Like they had like what, like the, the asylum for the criminally insane and imbeciles.
Yeah. That was another one. Imbeciles used to be the polite word. So he sends him this clipping about George Kimmel disappearing and the search for him and New York Life, of course, you know, being interested in finding him. So Andrew White writes to New York Life Insurance and tells them that he was Kimmel and still very much alive, which, of course, this was music to New York Life's ears, as you can imagine. But they couldn't just take his word. They began an investigation, and they were able to dredge up some information indicating that Andrew J. White was indeed George Kimmel.
So White's memory was spotty, and there was actually evidence of a head injury, namely this big scar, which might have accounted for why he didn't remember things very clearly and had been in, you know, different asylums.
Yeah.
He explained that he'd disappeared because he was kidnapped. When he got into that cab in Kansas City, he was drugged. He was kept in a drugged state and was being transported by one of the men in the cab. He believed they were taking him to Detroit.
Yeah. Why Detroit? I don't know, but
I don't think there's an explanation for that. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
But, they were on a train, which wrecked.
Yeah.
And that's how he got his head injury.
Oh,
his
bodyguard,
I believe you mean his captor here.
Yeah.
Disappeared, might have even been killed in the train wreck.
Yeah, and or Kimmel injured, was, in, you know, or severely injured and, you know, hauled away to the hospital or God knows what.
Kimmel was suffering from amnesia and drifted around. He eventually wound up in New York, where he was arrested for writing a bad check. He was committed to the insane asylum and later wound up in prison.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, he drifted a long ways if he wound up in New York. But question is who would kidnap him and why? And what Andrew White said was that a relative, which he hinted was his uncle Charles Johnson. Remember him? He's the guy who hired the Pinkertons and paid them out of his own pocket to search the country for him. But he hinted that his uncle Charles Johnson had embezzled $100,000 from the Pacific Express Company. And he said that he, George Kimmel, if you believe that, possessed certain information which would prove his relative's guilt in this matter.
Ooh.
And so as a result, Charles Johnson and some henchmen drugged him, kidnapped him, were transporting him apparently to Detroit when the wreck happened. Okay. All right.
I'm having trouble tracking the story. So the guy who made him disappear also hired the Pinkertons. And then the plan was to kidnap him, take him to Detroit and kill him there why?
I'm not sure. You know, why would they take him to Detroit? I mean, it's like, you know,
I'm pretty sure a human body will expire in Kansas City just as well as it does in Detroit.
No, why waste money on a train ticket, right?
Or just risk being seen, all the stuffing him into the cab, and he yells out and someone sees him. Like, there's all these complications with moving him.
Yeah.
Whereas if you just pop him coming out of his hotel, it's done.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he climbs into the cab and you just take him for a ride to the countryside and do it out in the woods.
Right,
somewhere.
Exactly.
But, you know, maybe the plan was, if they actually were going to kill him, again, we don't know exactly what their plan was, but maybe they were going to, like, pour a bunch of booze into him and stuff some used condoms in his pocket and some pornography and then push him off the train. And, you know, maybe that was the plan. I don't know. You know, and it would look like an accident. Like, he just got wasted and fell off the train, right?
Yeah, maybe try to cover it up.
Yeah, I mean, that could be one way to do it. And of course, the benefit of that versus, I guess, burying his body out in the woods is that his body turns up now, so the life insurance policy can be collected now. So that would be one big benefit to killing him and making it look like an accident, I guess. So maybe
I could see that. Yeah.
Maybe that's what they were going to do. I don't know. The story's a little hazy. And, of course, the problem was, of course, that Andrew White, a.k.a. George Kimmel, had a head injury. His memory was a little sketchy, a little foggy in places, you know. Very clear in some spots and very foggy in others, which is possible, although at the same time, it's a little suspicious as well.
Yeah, it makes you wonder.
It's a little convenient sometimes, but.
So the next thing he knew, he was in New York's Matawan Asylum with little memory of who he was or where he came from. He remained in that asylum for some time until he was ruled sane and then released. He transitioned into a new, awesome lifestyle as a homeless guy in New York.
Yeah, I bet it was even more fun back in those days.
I can only imagine.
I can imagine, yeah. I'm sure it was brutal.
Eventually, he wound up on the wrong side of the law, and he was sent to the state prison, where he eventually recalled his past life as George Kimmel, mostly thanks, we assume, to that newspaper clipping that his friend sent him.
Yeah. Although in one account that I read of this is actually in a periodical devoted to insurance matters. And I know, right? And that I managed to dig up online. And it said that this guy recalled Andrew White telling him that his name actually was Kimmel and he was from Kansas back in the asylum. I don't know if that's really true or not. Maybe this guy made that up. I really don't know.
That is interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. Yeah, if he way back when was actually talking about being George Kimmel. But again, that's pretty sketchy information. I had no idea if that's true or not. And by the way, also, Kimmel's uncle, Charles Johnson, actually was eventually busted for embezzlement. Actually, and that would have been prior to when Andrew White decided he was George Kimmel. But he was busted for embezzlement and went to prison himself. The question is, does this support Andrew White's story? Well, it would if it weren't for the fact that it was already, you know, kind of a done deal and had been in the papers. So, you know, it's sort of maybe could, but at the same time, that's information that's, you know, common knowledge. And this guy, if he was making it all up, could have, you know, incorporated that into his story. So it doesn't really help us, I don't think. But George Kimmel was alive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yay. But his sister, Edna Blonsett, was not buying it. She said that White was a lunatic and an imposter. And George Kimmel's mother, Stella Kimmel, also met with Andrew White and said that he was not her son.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Why would you
think
say that
they would know?
Think they'd know, and I'm trying to come up with a reason why they'd want to lie about that.
Well, one reason they might want to lie about it is that I'm kind of thinking of it. You know, Edna Blonsett actually at this point in time didn't really stand to make any money off the life insurance policy because it had been assigned. Long story, the bank, so after he disappeared, Charles Johnson took over. I guess they decided that they needed to keep paying premiums on the life insurance policy. And so he took that over. He was keeping the actual physical policy in the bank vault of the bank that he was working in, but the bank failed. And the bank was taken over and all of its assets were assumed by the Niles Bank, the national Niles Bank that I was talking about that filed the lawsuit. Yeah, so they essentially came into possession of the life insurance policy that way. Yeah, weird. So anyway, at this point in time, I don't know that Edna Blonsett stood to gain financially one way or the other from him being, you know, officially dead. I don't know if she would have seen a dollar of that pay, of that settlement.
Interesting.
At this point in time. But but on the other hand, you know, if she was going to get some sort of a payout, then that would be one reason to deny that this guy was her brother.
Mm-hmm.
Although it seems like kind of a lousy thing to do, you know.
Yeah.
Right. You know.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, on the other hand, the New York Life Insurance Company, they were pretty sure that Andrew J. White was the real deal.
Yeah.
And they were totally sure that White was, in fact, Kimmel. And they refused to give up pay on any claims until some sort of proof could be given that George Kimmel was truly dead.
Mm.
Edna Blonsett. Did I say that right? Bonslet. Yeah. Edna Bond.
Yeah, as I said. Yeah.
You're killing me, Edna.
Edna.
You're killing
Edna me, Bonslet. Edna. I know. It's Edna Bonslet. Yeah, I already mentioned this. Yeah, she had assigned it to the National Bank of Niles. Yeah.
You can see why they would be like, the guys, this looks hanky and it's our money on the line.
Yeah.
So Andrew J. White's true identity simply could not be definitively settled. White's story was kind of preposterous, but no one could really disprove it either.
It was a little preposterous, actually.
Let's find it. We know when he was in Kansas City. We know when he got in the cab. Let's find a train wreck going from Kansas City to Detroit and see if that even happened.
You know, interestingly, I don't know if anybody ever checked on that. Maybe train wrecks were so common back in those days. They didn't know. I don't know.
I don't think they were that common.
I've wondered about that myself, but I haven't been, you know, as obviously the news accounts from those days are, as far as coming across them via the internet, is kind of difficult. It's kind of patchy, you know.
That would be, you know, if this is a different kind of podcast where we could really do deep dives, that would be interesting to go and just hit up the historical archives of a bunch of Midwestern newspapers and see if we can find a report of a train wreck that's, you know, even close to the right time.
Yeah, but again, you know, the way it is right now for us, you know, you can do a little looking and not find anything that doesn't prove a damn thing.
Right.
You know, but what I have to wonder about this whole thing is, even if there was a train wreck, I have to wonder how it was that George Kimmel, amnesiac, was wandering all over America, and the Pinkertons had carpeted the country with his picture on those flyers, and not one person recognized him. Because, you know, if this guy with, you know, again, this flyer only went to law enforcement, as far as I know. But a guy who's got no visible means of support, who's, you know, suffering from amnesia and just sort of wandering around aimlessly, is going to come to the attention of law enforcement, don't you think?
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
you would think, I would assume.
You would think that he wandered a long, long ways without being spotted by a law enforcement officer who recognize him from the picture in the flyer. So anyway, yeah. I think that's a little, you know, that kind of throws a little bit of cold water on Andrew White's story, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
I think so too.
Yeah.
So basically what this all comes down to is competing unprovable claims. As a result, the courts were busy with this case for over 10 years. That's like more than a decade.
Yeah.
First, a court in St. Louis declared Kimmel dead. Then the United States Circuit Court of Appeals declared that there's insufficient evidence in the case, and they reversed the decision. In the meantime, some people who had known Kimmel met with Andrew White and said that he was indeed George Kimmel. Also, some of the relatives bought White's claim, and this includes Kimmel's cousin, Mrs. Harriet Fox, and his niece, and Mrs. Charles Montagu, and his former fiance, Mrs. Harriet Marston.
Well, I guess she married somebody else. Wow.
I guess so. But yeah, the suit was retried yet again in 1910, and that resulted in a hung jury.
Yikes. And so in August of 1911, Andrew White was released from prison, finally. And he immediately announced his intention to return to his hometown, allegedly, of Niles, Michigan, where his mother, allegedly, Stella Kimmel, was still living, and to prove once and for all that he was indeed George Kimmel. And the results of this were kind of inconclusive. Of course, he met with Stella Kimmel, and according to press reports, he really poured on the charm, brought out the violins. He said to her, this is the quote that I read, I found, I couldn't resist, said to her, quote, "Mother, don't you know your boy? Don't disown me any longer. You know I am your son," unquote.
That sounds like We've done enough of these historical episodes, you know, I feel like I've got it. I feel like I've got an ear for yellow journalism and that reeks of it. He may have said something like that, but
yeah, there's some strong hint of paraphrasing in there and a little bit of embellishment.
Yeah. He may have said, it is totally possible he said something like that. I mean, I do think it's really interesting though. I mean, I think it's basically a fact that his mom didn't recognize him, but he says he recognizes her. I don't know one that's gone quite like this.
Yeah, no, it's, he did know stuff that he really couldn't have known if he wasn't George Kimmel.
Yeah.
But Mrs. Kimmel, of course, was not buying it. And she told him to F off or whatever it was they said back in those days. But she was not having any of this foolishness.
Yes. Yeah. She told him to go bugger a darn bean jar.
Yeah, there you go.
Andrew White then went on a grand tour of the town of Niles, where he pointed out landmarks and recalled incidents from the past that all proved to be correct.
Hmm.
He repeatedly greeted various people by name, and he seemed to have knowledge of things he could not have known unless he was George Kimmel.
Hmm.
But on the other hand, he also didn't know details that Kimmel really would have known. But Kimmel, or White, had, of course... he suffered a really serious head injury and memory loss. So that could account for that, right?
Yeah, but that's essentially what it came down to. When somebody would pose a question and stump him, he'd just go, oh, I don't know. But, you know, hey, man, I mean, my head ain't working quite right these days, you know, because of that head injury from the train wreck, you know, and he always had that out. Although at the same time, you got to admit it could have been true. It's possible. True. I mean, memory loss is a weird thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is.
No, it's true. Amnesia doesn't work quite like it does in the movies where you lose memory of every single thing and then it all comes back all at once.
Yeah, this is actually interesting. This was a big trope when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
And it doesn't seem to be that way anymore. But the big trope was that if you have a head injury and you have amnesia, if somebody smacks you on the head in the exact same spot, your memories will come back. Do you remember that one?
Oh, I've definitely. I mean, yeah. That was, I think, one out of every five episodes of television from like 1959 to 76.
Yeah, it was seriously kind of a cliche. And I don't know, it really went out of style for some reason. Maybe people are actually trying to treat amnesia with blows to the head and they decided to cut that crap out.
I don't remember who I am. Here, let me hit you with this hockey stick. Oh, God, he's dead. Well,
let me hit you harder.
The people of Niles were evenly split in their opinion about Andrew White. Some were sure that this man must be George Kimmel, while the other half was equally sure that he absolutely was not. It's probably made for some lively conversation at the barbershop and down at the saloon, I'm sure.
Probably. It actually probably livened things up in that town for a little while, you know?
Yeah, right.
Gave him something to talk about, yeah. Sure, it was free entertainment for everybody there. But And so a little time goes by, and there's yet another lawsuit. This one began in early 1912. Another lawsuit about Andrew White and if he was the real deal or not. And, of course, the same witnesses were brought forward by both sides, people who'd known Kimmel. And as always, some of them swore that Andrew White was George Kimmel, and some of them said, no, he was not. Then something new popped up, though, in February 1912. One John Boone Swinney, who was a rancher from New Mexico, came forward with some new information. And I actually found this in the New York Times. I mean, it's just elsewhere, too, but actually this is for real. This was reported on February 10th. And 11th, 1912, in the Times, Swinney said that in August 1988, Kimmel, along with himself, Swinney, and also two other men, J.A. Johnson and Robert M. Snyder of Kansas City, had gone to search for buried treasure near Coos Bay, Oregon, of all places.
Buried treasure in Coos Bay.
What I was wondering. You know, it's possible. There's other buried treasure legends on the Oregon coast, but not in that particular part. But, you know, hang on.
Right.
But the only account that I can find putting Robert Snyder in this party IDs him as a Kansas City banker, which I thought was kind of intriguing.
Huh, that is intriguing, right?
He was a banker. Yeah, George Kimmel worked at a bank, and his uncle Charles Johnson was a banker. So that's interesting. But I mean, Yeah.
Well, the gang actually had some success, which I find kind of surprising.
Yeah.
They found like $4,000 of treasure. I don't know. Whose treasure? Like, was Bluebeard? Like, what?
I had no idea. Maybe it was some of that the Knights of the Golden Circle treasure.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder. Yeah. It's
well, it could have been random. It really could have been, actually. You know, I mean.
Yeah. I mean, the legends around treasure on the Oregon coast are always really sketchy.
The famous one, of course, the Neocani treasure, and that goes back to Lewis and Clark. They were actually told this story by the local Indians, Clatsops, right, when they showed up, and it shows up in their journals and everything. And there is substantial evidence. I mean, incontrovertible evidence that at least one Spanish galleon did shipwreck on the Oregon coast.
Oh, yeah, we know it did, but did it have giant, you know, trunks of doubloons or whatever?
That have boatloads of gold? It might have. It could have.
I mean, the English wrecked a couple of ships on the Oregon coast, and they sure were not full of anything but starving men.
Yeah. Well, as the Indians recounted the story to Lewis and Clark, this galleon showed up, and it actually did not wreck. Some men rowed ashore in a boat with a chest, and then they buried it. They took it up. They took it up away from the beach a ways, dug a hole, and buried it. And they had a black man with them who they shot and pushed into the hole on top of the treasure and then buried it all.
Apparently, this is sounding familiar to me now.
Yeah, apparently the thinking being that the local Indians, the Indians are probably going to spot them doing this, right? So the thinking being that if they pushed this black man in, the Indians would be too terrified to go anywhere near the treasure and dig it up.
Because of the color of the man's skin? Is that what's going on in this awful tale?
Well, that is one train of thought is that, they'd be scared of him because of the color of his skin. They'd never seen anybody like that, maybe. Or maybe he was just, to them, the most expendable member of their gang. And they figured that any corpse would do as far as keeping the Indians away because they wouldn't want to disturb a grave. I'm not sure. But anyway... this actually kind of makes sense. Well, now think about this. So if you are the captain of a galleon, a Spanish galleon, and they brought back boatloads of gold from the Philippines, and they took it all across to Acapulco, their North American base on the Pacific, and eventually it was transported across the country and shipped over to back to Spain. Now, if you're heading back to Acapulco with this, it would kind of make sense to make a little stop along the way, bury the gold somewhere, and then when you get closer to Acapulco, scuttle your ship and then just when you finally get to Acapulco, just say, we went down in a storm. So sorry, but all the gold is gone. So sorry. And then eventually you can make your way back, hopefully, and retrieve the gold. If they buy your story,
I don't want to get too far into that. I have a lot of problems with that. Like, why would you take a detour hundreds of miles north? The idea that a guy was going to be like, well, we lost all of your gold. So anyway, I'm going to take a walk, and then just walks across all of Spanish California into totally unknown British territory.
Yeah.
Or American territory to go get it is like, that's pretty wild.
Actually, no. It turns out that between the currents in the Pacific, the currents and the trade winds, it actually made more sense to sail north from the Philippines and cut across right about Japan and head due east, by the current, the trade winds and everything. It actually was faster to sail kind of a circular route that took you to North America right around the Oregon coast and then sail southward from there.
Okay.
So it actually made sense to do that. And so that's Spanish galleons did wreck from time to time on the Oregon coast. Right. Yeah, that is why.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Right. So, anyway, this is way off. But we are talking about the possibility of buried treasure in Coos Bay. So I guess that's...
Okay, so you brought me around. I do think it is possible, remotely possible, that there's buried treasure in Coos Bay, Oregon.
Yeah, but not necessarily the Spanish. I mean, a lot of people have been along since those days. I mean, there was a serious gold rush. Somebody from Northern California could have been heading northward and decided to bury it to stop off and bury some gold somewhere.
The pirates of the Barbary Coast.
Yeah, it could have been something. Yeah, there's all kinds.
We know some of them made it to Southern Oregon.
Yeah, and so there's so where were we? Let's see. Okay, so they found $4,000 of the treasure. really took a detour there.
The doubloons. I think our listeners are going to friggin' take us to task for that. So they got their doubloons, $4,000.
Yeah. Not necessarily doubloons. For all we know, it was just it was just paper money, but it was probably gold.
Probably knew it was Pokemon cards.
Yeah.
But this is when things really start to go all Treasure of the Sierra Madres.
Oh, yeah.
One of my favorite movies. John Swinney said Kimmel and J.A. Johnson had an argument, and Johnson pulled a revolver and shot Kimmel fatally.
Ooh.
Swinney then killed Johnson.
Oh.
If Swinney was telling the truth, George Kimmel died 2 weeks after he disappeared on August 14th, 1898.
Yeah. Oh, that explains why nobody ever saw a sign of him, huh?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting story. There was unfortunately nothing to corroborate it. And it also turned out that Swinney had served time in prison for murder and robbery, which did not help his credibility. Let's see, the other witnesses, let's see, J.A. Johnson was shot by Swinney, and Kimmel, of course, was shot by Johnson. So the only witness was Robert M. Snyder of Kansas City, who apparently was dead by this time. I did a little looking around, and I did find a Robert M. Snyder of Kansas City, a banker, who died in 1906. And I found actually a very long, detailed obituary of him, which doesn't mention any treasure hunting trips to the Oregon coast. But, you know, maybe not the same guy. Maybe he was. I don't know. Maybe he didn't tell anybody about his little treasure trip, especially if it involved somebody, a couple of people getting killed. Maybe he decided that he just wanted to sort of, you know, keep that all on the DL.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, forgot me.
Or maybe a different Robert Snyder. I'm not sure.
All possible, right?
Yeah, whichever Snyder it was, he did not show up to corroborate Swinney's story.
And Andrew White's attorney called Swinney's testimony so improbable and highly colored as to be unworthy of consideration of sane men.
Unquote. So it kind of sounds like the pot calling the kettle black, huh?
Yeah, that's just what I was like. And I was like, the guy who's working the amnesia storyline is like, I don't buy the treasure hunting storyline.
Well, I agree. It is a little less than, it's a little hard to believe, I guess.
This whole thing is like a Perry Mason episode. I mean, it's bonkers.
It kind of is. Yeah, people are telling some pretty crazy stories here. And it's hard to imagine a respectable guy like George Kimmel dropping everything, including his job, to go treasure hunting a couple of thousand miles away.
Right.
Unless, of course, he was skipping town anyway because of the embezzling and everything.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Could have been that.
So the faction that was against White brought two witnesses who swore that Andrew White was a railroad worker who went by the nickname, and I love this, Turkey White. That's one for the ages.
Turkey White. Yeah.
Somebody call Turkey White in here.
Yeah.
They were pretty adamant about it. But then.
And apparently they were, from what I heard, they were pretty credible, too. They actually had a real impact on the jury.
I would too. I mean,
yeah.
If someone told me like, oh, I know that guy. We used to call him Turkey. I'd be like, you're not making a detail like that up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but then later a man named Andrew H. White showed up and claimed that he was the real Turkey White.
Okay.
Or bananas.
Okay. So yeah. Yeah. So, so we're back to square one on that one.
I feel like this trial must've had a laugh track. Like, this is so weird.
Yeah.
So, yeah, in March 1912, the latest Kimmel jury delivered their verdict.
Yeah.
This was after hearing of the treasure hunt and the murder story and the dueling Turkey Whites. And they ruled that Andrew White was not George Kimmel, but they were totally agnostic as to whether Kimmel was dead or alive when the present suit was filed. This meant that the question of whether or not the Niles National Bank got their insurance money was still left hanging.
Yes. Still not settled.
Mm. Yeah.
Took another 5 years, actually.
Yeah.
The jury's decision was appealed by New York Life because they wanted some resolution here. And eventually, like I said, 5 years later, a federal judge finally negotiated a compromise where New York Life paid $7,700 to the Niles National Bank, which is, less than a third of, the insured amount. Okay. So it's a victory for them, I suppose. But as far as the American legal system was concerned, at this point, George Kimmel was now dead.
Huh.
Yeah. So case closed, right?
I guess.
Yeah.
Except for that Andrew White vowed to continue to fight to claim his true identity as George Kimmel. I'm not sure why, because the 1917 court verdict basically put the kibosh and all of that from a legal point of view.
Kind of stuck a fork in it, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, he was donezo. But I mean, anyway, we'll talk about this. I I have some theories about this that we'll get to, but he basically continued to insist that he was George Kimmel, who, of course, the courts considered dead. Eventually, yeah. Andrew White, such as he was, disappeared. In 1928, one of his old allies got a letter from him. It was postmarked from San Francisco, but with no return address. This was the last time anybody ever heard of him. And what became of him, his fate, is unknown.
Mm.
Was he really George Kimmel? So that was kind of a bummer ending. He got the raw end of that deal.
If he really was George Kimmel, then yeah, that is a really sad ending to the story. Yeah.
I mean, it's one of the, I mean, honestly, like, you know, this part of this, I'm laughing at how wacky it is, but if this poor guy, George Kimmel, got kidnapped, beaten up, survived a train wreck, lived as a vagrant, and finally got back to his family, and they didn't even believe him, and the court ruled he wasn't who he actually was, that makes the story not a comedy, but a tragedy.
Yeah, it does. It does. So that's, well, we'll talk about that a little bit in theories as to whether this Andrew White really was George Kimmel or not. But yeah. I mean, but let's say if he was an imposter, it still leaves some unanswered questions. For one thing, if he was a fake, why did he decide to claim that he was George Kimmel? Why? I mean, and also Andrew White seemed to know a lot about Kimmel's early life, pre-kidnapping or pre-disappearance, I guess. So he seemed to know a lot about that. So if he was a fraud, who gave him all this information?
Yeah. Yeah. I got to think about it. I don't really know. I think while we mull this over in our head brains, we should take a little commercial break.
I guess we should. And then we'll come back with a few theories.
I like this idea.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
And we're back. Nothing to add to those commercials except bye, bye, bye. Yes.
Buy their stuff.
Tell them Joe and Vincent sent you. But let's talk about some theories. I don't know. You got any favorite theories, Vincent?
I don't choose between my children. I like them all equally. But I'm going to start at the top, which was, I think, probably what it was the most interesting to entertain, which is that Andrew White really was George Kimmel.
Uh-huh. Yeah, maybe he was, although I don't know.
It seems like it could be possible.
Some people who knew him were convinced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But others weren't, like his mother and his sister.
Yeah, that's kind of, they have more of a vote than other people, I would say, don't you think?
I'd like to think that if I went missing and showed up back in town, my mom would be like, yeah, that's my son.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, their word counts for a little bit more than other people, I think. So that's a mark against him being actually George Kimmel.
Yeah, without a little information from you.
Oh, that was our bad. Yes, sorry.
Business. White had blue eyes, but ooh. Kimmel's family and friends said that he had brown eyes.
Hmm.
His doctor stated that his medical records confirmed this. New York Life actually brought a doctor into court who argued that all the hardships that George Kimmel had endured had changed his eye color.
I like this theory. So I too can have brown eyes, huh?
Yeah, I just got to whack you over the head.
Whack me over the head and go live in the streets of New York for a couple of years and be committed to an insane asylum. And yeah, then maybe I'll have brown eyes too.
I don't know. Do we know? I didn't have time to look it up. Is there any science behind this? Can you?
I don't think so, no.
Yeah, I don't really think so either.
I think I've never heard of eye color changing for any reason, but.
Well, the only thing I can think of that will change the color of an eye is an injury to the eye in which there's a way that it becomes dilated in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And then it can actually change your eye color somewhat.
Oh,
but yeah. That also leads to trauma, like you'd be going around wearing sunglasses all the time or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I don't think it works. I don't know.
Yeah,
I guess I'd have to look it up. I think it casts major doubt. This is certainly not something that happens all the time. And
no,
I don't think it would work quite like where a guy would have blue eyes and then they turn brown. I don't know how that works.
I guess I was thinking about that country song by Chris LaGale years ago. I don't turn my brown eyes blue, but that's the mm-hmm. other direction. Yeah. But according to Chris LaGale, apparently, yeah, your eye color can change from heartache. But anyway, that's
Crystal Gale, solve the mystery.
Well, let's see. What else about undermines Andrew White's credibility here? Apparently, he did have a bit of a sketchy history, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. He also, and I think this is a big one, almost more even than the eye color one, honestly, because who knows what, I mean, maybe there was something that happened to him with the head injury, but he used other aliases.
Yeah.
J.W. Hosmer, J.W. White, W.A. Watson. This would probably lead us to believe that White had, at different points in his life, been very flexible about the truth in his identity and his name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it does. And so, I don't know. This probably, maybe the whole thing was just a con. And it might have been that, too, that maybe his buddy that sent him the newspaper clipping about that,
mm-hmm.
you know, they didn't actually, in truth, recall him saying that he was George Kimmel, but instead he spotted this and everybody's, you know, looking for this guy, wondering where this guy is. And he sends it to this guy, Andrew White, and says, "Hey, buddy, this is right up your alley. I'll bet you can call these people out of a few bucks." You know?
Really something I would like to know. You know, we're talking about little mysteries within mysteries. Who was John Doe and why was he like, check this article out?
I don't know. I was not able to find the guy's name. So I just don't know. But
yeah. All right. So let's move on to another one.
Let's see.
White was an imposter, but part of the story was actually true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So maybe in this one, Kimmel was done in for his part in the embezzlement scheme.
Yeah.
But of course, given that White was making that stuff up, it'd be a coincidence if a major part of his story just sort of happened to turn out to be true. But I think by the time that White came forward, Charles Johnson's embezzlement had been uncovered and publicized.
Yeah. Although, you know, even though I think that was probably what happened, is he was already aware of this, of Charles Johnson's problems with the law. Mm-hmm. It's possible that, you know, maybe this was sort of kind of true, even just as a coincidence that maybe George Kimmel was actually involved in Charles Johnson's embezzlement schemes.
Yeah.
And threatened to tell, and knew too much, threatened to tell or whatever.
That doesn't sound unreasonable.
Yeah. And so Charles Johnson, arranges for him to be done away with.
Yeah.
Maybe. Although again, the problem I have with that is that he spent a bunch of money hiring the Pinkertons.
Yeah, exactly.
I had no idea how much money he spent, but I assume it was a pretty substantial amount.
They were not cheap.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know exactly how much that would be, but I know that they were the premier detective agency in the world.
Yeah.
And they charged like it.
Well, I'm just thinking what it must have cost just to send out those flyers to all across America. That must have been fairly expensive.
Right. With a photo printed on it.
Yeah.
Not cheap.
Yeah. I would think so. Even though it's sort of possible, I guess it doesn't entirely make sense either.
Yeah.
Especially since if Johnson was aware of the life insurance policy, then, you know, he wouldn't want to disappear him. He'd want to but again, that gets us back to the train wreck story. Maybe mm-hmm. they were going to push him off the train and make it look like an accident. But then the problem with that is I'm just about 100% sure that Andrew White was an imposter. So I think the train story and the train wreck were BS.
Yeah.
You know.
I am inclined to agree with you.
Yeah. And so, I don't know. It just seems to me that it would have been more profitable to not disappear him, which of course could happen, but it seems to me it would have been more profitable to have the body turn up right away, or at least pretty quickly.
I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah. If it was Charles Johnson.
That makes sense.
Let's see. There's another one, is that George Kimmel just skipped town.
I think this is likely.
This is quite possible. He skipped town. Although, again, it must have been tricky for him to evade detection for all those years. Again, with the Pinkertons looking for him and carpet bombing America with all of these flyers. Mm-hmm. You'd think it'd be pretty hard for him to do that. He did have a mustache. Maybe he shaved the mustache and combed his hair a different way. Maybe he did that. I don't know. Yeah.
He also, this will dovetail us up into the next theory.
Yeah.
If he headed out to someplace like Coos Bay, that's pretty remote. You change up your identity a little bit and kind of get a fresh start out west.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that was really the middle of nowhere back then.
Oh, it was. Well, it actually, if he truly did hand in his dinner pail on August 14th, that would have been before the flyers were circulated all across the country.
Yeah.
And so we're back to John Boone Swinney's story about the treasure hunt on the Oregon coast somewhere. And this story is a little outlandish. But on the other hand, you know, one thing that lends a little credibility is Kimball was last seen getting into a cab with three other men.
Yeah.
And there were four men in the treasure hunting party, correct?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So there's that.
I think this tracks.
Yeah. And also if he died 2 weeks after he disappeared, which is what Swinney says, this would account for the fact that no sightings of him were ever reported for all those years afterwards. And even though, like I said, America had been carpet bombed with photos of him.
Mm-hmm.
This might also explain why he wanted that $530 in cash that he took out of the bank and collected in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
Because he needed to travel across the country. So he needed traveling expenses and money for traveling expenses, treasure hunting expenses. Need to buy shovels or, you know, dowsing sticks or metal detectors.
Whatever they were using to look up for whatever this Spanish treasure or whatever the heck it was.
Yeah.
I think that all kind of tracks. In fact, yeah, I wonder if Swinney is telling us the whole truth, but I kind of think this is the most streamlined, sensible story.
It really is. I mean, he might be embellishing it for one reason or another. It might be that what really happened is they found the money and Swinney shot everybody. Or maybe Swinney and Snyder, the other guy. Snyder died in 1906 in a car wreck. If it was the same Snyder that I found in my searches, I don't know. But maybe the two of them had already schemed in advance. If they found the treasure, they would just kill the other two and take the treasure for themselves. Maybe that's what happened. I don't know. But so it's possible then that his skeleton, George Kimball's skeleton, that is somewhere buried near Coos Bay. So maybe you and I, some one of these weekends, should travel down there and sniff around, see what we can find.
Let's see if we can find a 120-year-old, 124-year-old skeleton.
maybe. I don't know. Yeah. There's probably more than a few buried in the woods out there anyway. So how are we going to know?
We'll find something. We'll find somebody.
Yeah. But then again, on the other hand, why would anybody bury treasure in or near Coos Bay? We've talked about this.
That's what I'm saying.
I know.
It just doesn't seem to respect your own treasure.
I know. Well, we're both from Oregon,
we're from Oregon. We get to make that joke.
We get to joke about poor
the rest of you.
Coos
be
Bay.
Nice to Coos Bay.
Absolutely. No, Coos Bay is an okay town and everything, but I got to tell you,
it's really nice down there.
It is. It is. But nothing ever happens there.
No, it's not. Yeah. This would be the most exciting stuff. I think that probably happened at Coos Bay.
It would be. Yeah. But who knows? It's entirely possible, again, that, somebody did actually bury a stash of gold or cash or something, there. Why not? Again, it's possible. So anyway, this is like, I guess I'm going to vote for Swinney. I think that.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you. When I first read this, I did not find him credible.
Yeah.
He seemed like a crook and a fabulist, but truth is his story makes the most sense. So I have no choice but to go with that one.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. So that's what I'm going to say too, although I wouldn't bet the farm on it, but.
No. Well, I'm almost certain that Swinney is not telling the whole truth about what happened.
Yeah, probably not.
I got my suspicions.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, that is, that's about it, I guess, for this story. And
I think it is.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
I guess. Yeah. What are we going to tell our listeners?
We can send this one down that lonesome river.
All right. Yeah. Stick around for some useful factoids from the lovely what's her face, and all about you know, social media and
the lovely what's her face, Tess Carter.
Sorry, I'm sorry. And sorry, Tess. And I'm just kidding. And of course, shoot us an email if you know anything. If you're from Coos Bay and you know anything about this story, we'd love to hear from you. If you found a skeleton in the woods recently, we'd love to hear from you especially.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and of course, the usual thing, even if you're a skeleton in the woods, we want you to leave us a rating and a review.
Oh, we really do. Yeah. It helps us so much.
Absolutely. Yeah. And yeah, we don't turn away dead people voting for us. We do not do that here. But
especially not.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Yes, leave a review. It helps other people find the show, and then it builds our community, and we love it.
Yep, absolutely. All right. Okay, well,
catch you next week.
Yeah, until next week. What do they say in Coos Bay? Arrivederci?
Yeah, that's what they all speak Italian in Coos Bay.
There you go. Okay, that's
the word. They say, coos you later.
All right, ta-ta.
The Shocking Details can be found at www.theshockingdetails.com. We're on Twitter, @ShockingDetails. For discussion of episodes and more, our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/ShockingDetailsPodcast/. Or you can email us at theshockingdetailspodcast@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, please consider giving us a like and a positive review and letting people know about us.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.